Yes, gang, it's Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM.
One of our planes was missing, 2 hours overdue. Yes, one of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio sets were humming, they waited for the word. Then a voice broke through that humming, and this is what they heard. Coming in on the wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Da, 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 da.
What a show.
What a show.
What a fight.
What a fight.
Yes, we really
hit our target for tonight. Tonight.
How we'll sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's a field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord. Coming in on the wing and a prayer.
Glory be.
Hallelujah.
Glory be.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. On a wing and a prayer.
What a show. What a fight. Yes, we really hit our target for tonight. How we'll sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's a field over there. With our
full crew aboard
and our
trust in the Lord.
Amen. In on a wing
and a prayer.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy. So make a date today to see the USA and see it in your Chevrolet.
Traveling east, traveling west, wherever you go, Chevy service is best. Southward or north, near place or far, there's a Chevrolet dealer for your Chevrolet car.
So make a date today to see the USA
and see it in your Chevrolet.
Hello, amigo. Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say bananas have to ripen in a certain way, and when they're flecked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas taste the best and are the best for you. You can put them in a salad, you can put them in a pie, any way you want to eat them. It's impossible to beat them, but bananas like the climate of the very, very tropical equator. So you should never put bananas in the refrigerator.
To have bananas that are fully ripe, you must be absolutely sure to take them home and let them ripen at
any
temperature.
Oh, sure.
Yes, folks, don't put those bananas in the refrigerator, whatever you do. And that's the Four Vagabonds coming in on a wing and a prayer, and nothing could typify this program as we fly each and every week here on WRCA 1330 AM on the proverbial wing and a prayer. Let me ask you this, friends. Have you spent hours upon hours of electronic restoration work on that classic radio you found? Do you wish to complete that vintage look? We would humbly suggest that you check out the grill cloth at richmonddesignsinc.com to complete that set and give it the finish that it properly deserves. richmonddesignsinc.com has the cloth for your Philco Zenith or other very fine set. You can also check out some of the other very nifty radios, very well done jobs that Kenny has worked on and brought back to life. You can peek into the workshop, the world of the master craftsman. So please check out richmonddesignsinc.com for your grill cloth needs. It is imperative that we support the folks who provide us with quality furnishings to complete our projects. Yes, well, whether you are listening on an Arvin, Bendix, Clarion, Delco, Emerson, or the like, we welcome you to Tube Talk. Or even if you listen on the internet, a lot of people do. And you know, you can do a whole version of the ABCs with radio manufacturers' names if you kind of got the drift of that little piece there we were doing, where we're going. Well, you know, we just had Victory Day in the great state of Rhode Island, and that used to be VJ Day. Victory over Japan Day, they called it, and I've abbreviated it now. It's Victory Day. So it's that time of the year again to hear this one.
History in every century records an act that lives forevermore. We'll recall as into line we fall the thing that happened on Hawaii shore. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we give the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
You know, you might be asking yourself, what's up with all this World War II themed music? Well, when we get to our guest tonight, it will all become crystal clear, I guarantee it. And why don't we take a little break? Mr. Nat King Cole. A little something different.
The evening breeze caressed the trees tenderly. The trembling trees embraced the breeze tenderly. night came wandering by and lost in a sigh. Were we the shore was kissed by sea and mist tenderly. I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly. Your arms open wide and close me inside. You took my lips, you took my love so tenderly. So tenderly, you took my lips, you took my love so tenderly.
Yes, so sweet, so tender, so pretty, so Nat King Cole. And I hope you're enjoying that on your SoFilco, Zenith, Arvin, Stromberg, etc., etc., etc. You know, don't forget, Friday night is kind of vintage night here on WRCA, so stop by, not just for Tube Talk, but for some of the other nifty retro radio programs, and even on Saturday night, you get some retro music here. We serve your vintage music and entertainment needs, and that's our goal here on Tube Talk. That's job number one, and we're going to be off to the parlor for a little chat with the guests soon. Let's sneak in one more song, shall we?
Some people say he's just a crazy guy. To me, he means a million other things. For he's the one who taught this happy heart of mine to fly. He wears a pair of silver wings. And though it's pretty tough, the job he does above, I wouldn't have him change it for a king. An ordinary fellow in the uniform I love, he wears a pair of silver wings. I'm so full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, he with those wings on his tunic, me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of silver wings. so full of pride when we go walking. Every time he's home on leave, he with those wings on his tunic, me with my heart on my sleeve. But when I'm left alone and we are far apart, I sometimes wonder what tomorrow brings. For I adore that crazy guy who taught my happy heart to wear a pair of
We are pleased as punch tonight to welcome Lisa Spa, author of World War II Heroes, Letters of Compassion, to Tube Talk. It is a fascinating view into the lives of many World War II shortwave listeners and how they touch the lives and families of prisoners of war across the nation. Lisa, thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Paul, thanks for having me on Tube Talk. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you know, after reading through this book, all I can say is it, you know, sort of reinforces and cements my already high opinion of the Greatest Generation. My parents were members of that. And just to give the audience a little background on yourself before we get talking about your family's connection to these letters and your journey on compiling them and investigating them all, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Lisa Spahr.
Well, I'm happy to. I'm 40, so I was born in 1973, and I'm the only grandchild in my family. So the wonderful man that I write about and talk about, I refer to him as Pappy, my grandfather. I'm his only grandchild. So our family went from 12 to 4 to 1. So we have a small family. I was born and raised in Wellsville, Pennsylvania. From there, I went on to Philadelphia to attend Temple University, where I studied psychology, on to D.C. to work for the American Legion, and then on to Liverpool, England, to study my master's in psychology at the University of Liverpool. From there, I ended up in Pittsburgh working in law and psychiatry, and then back to D.C. to work for a military consultant or a contractor, if you will, and then also a police think tank. So most of my life has been studying psychology and understanding human behavior, the ways in which we work, both to the positive and also to our own detriment, actually. And then stumbled upon this story in 2005 when I was still living and working in D.C.
Well, that's great. And it's an interesting background, and you have that connection there with working with the military a little bit. And Pennsylvania, what a great radio state, you know, home of Philco. And down in Red Lion, Pennsylvania, was a furniture plant that made a lot of great radio cabinets, too. So KDKA coming out of Pennsylvania as well. So it's a great state with a lot of connections to radio. And, you know, the title of the book, which I have my copy right here, World War II Radio Heroes, Letters of Compassion, it couldn't have been named any better. And, you know, why don't we just start, tell us your experience with your own family, and this is a great segue. You know, you find a trunk in the attic, and usually on this program we hear from somebody who says, well, I found this radio in the attic, and then we take it from there. But in this case, you were looking at finding out a little bit more about your grandfather, and you found a trunk in the attic, and why don't you just kind of run us from there? What did you find in there that helped you connect?
Absolutely. I was in my 20s, my late 20s, and I asked to look in that trunk that I knew contained my Pappy and my grandmother's things from their life. I lost Pappy before I became a teenager, and I lost my grandma around the age of 5. So I didn't know them as well as I would like, particularly growing into adulthood. So I took a look in this trunk, and I found this beautiful cigar box, and it said war letters in black magic marker. And I thought, oh, I'm going to find these beautiful love letters between my grandma and my Pappy. And unbeknownst to me, not one letter in that box was from Grandma or to Pappy, but instead hundreds of letters from men and women around the country writing to my great-grandmother, to my Pappy's mother, to tell her that her son was alive and that he was serving as a prisoner of war being held in Germany. And I must confess to you, it took weeks for me to get my head around this. I was looking at these letters, and the first thing I said is, I don't know any of these people. I don't know if they knew our family. And the more I read them, I realized they did not know our family. They were simply reaching out to a woman to tell her that her son was living, that he was alive. And once I grasped that notion that people were doing this to strangers, helping strangers in this very compassionate way, that's when I knew I was onto something beautifully rich and amazing, and I had to tell the story in the best way I could. I also had to figure out what shortwave radio meant, what ham radio was, and try to find a way ultimately to say thank you to these men and women.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, from reading the letters that you put into the book, you know, I felt moved and, you know, really proud of these shortwave radio listeners, some of whom were probably ex-hams, you know, who couldn't broadcast any longer, who found themselves in the listening to the shortwave bands because that's the best way they could use their equipment and their time. But, you know, there were a lot of average American citizens, too, who were listening for news, any type of news. And, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, as radio manufacturers in the 30s especially, everybody started to have radios, and radios came down in price, and manufacturing techniques got a little bit more value-oriented. Well, these companies are looking for how to get an edge on each other. And towards the late 30s, you start to see the shortwave bands get added to the radios, which were typically AM broadcast prior to that. And as the world turns, so to speak, pardon the pun, things are developing. People are aware of what's going on in Europe and the crises, you know, with Hitler and with Poland. And, you know, so shortwave becomes very, very relevant for them. So whereas before it might have just been interesting listening to the foreign news occasionally, now it becomes a direct source of news. And this is sort of the first war that somebody could sit in their home, for example, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and tune in to Radio Berlin and actually hear the propaganda, hear the news, or hear it from Rome, or listen to the BBC. So the timing with radio and radio technology, what people had available at that time with the onset of World War II, is perfect to help them on this type of a mission. So it all really worked out very well. And again, it's just it really touched me too. A lot of ordinary people, you know, who are doing very extraordinary things. And one of my favorite movies of the time, a little corny, but Jimmy Cagney plays Bull Halsey, and he's talking to one of his group leaders, and the guy just, you know, he's an average American guy, he was a flyer, and he didn't want the responsibility, he didn't want these men's lives on his hands, and Halsey just goes, I know the same way you feel, this is all about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And it's just the way it is here. It's just the way that it turned out. So now, what did you find? You know, you found letters from all over the country and from lots of different people and lots of different walks of life. And what were some of the messages that they were telling your grandmother?
So most the body of the message normally included this one particular phrase. It said, I have arrived safely in Germany as a prisoner. And sometimes that was the one sentence in the body of the letter or the penny postcard. Your son, Robert Spahr, was heard on the radio. I have arrived safely in Germany as a prisoner. But I will tell you that some people, as you saw in the book, some people wrote a full-page letter. They typed a full-page letter. Mm-hmm. Some people had two pages back-to-back. So some people gave far more information. Some went on to tell us what time they heard the message, not only the date, but also the time, but also on what frequency they heard it. So some people went into very great detail, even telling my great-grandmother what she could send to her son,
yes,
who was a prisoner, send candy and cigarettes. You can't send publishing materials direct, but you can reach to the publishers, and they can send to your son.
Yep.
People were amazing in the amount of detail that they provided. And then once in a while, you would have someone who said, they would sign their name anonymous, or they would sign their name a loyal American. They didn't feel comfortable putting their name,
right,
or their return address on. They would say something like, I heard a message that I believe pertains to someone you love. Please reach out to me. So once in a while, you would get something that was a little more cryptic. But for the most part, people were very free in saying, on this date at this time, I heard,
right,
your son, or I heard a message about your son. And ultimately, the heart of it was, He's alive, and he's serving as a prisoner of war in Germany.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting, too. I noticed at several different letters, as I was accidentally, as I was tuning around the dial, or I accidentally picked up, or, and again, you know, some of these folks may not want to be put in a bucket that, you know, I enjoy listening to enemy propaganda, so they preface it by saying, you know, this was something I picked up. And obviously for somebody, you know, given the reception conditions that they might have been experiencing and how difficult it could be to make out with the accent some of the information, the likelihood that it was by accident was probably pretty small. But that was the way they wished, you know, to express themselves. And I can understand that because in that type of a conflict, you know, everybody really wanted to be considered to be part of the war effort. Now, I'm going to read, this is a note from a fellow who you'd contacted. He lives in Brookline, Mass., not far from us here in Cambridge. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Morton Bardfield, United States Army retired. And the reason I'm going to, this gives you a little rationale as to why he was interested in doing this, but I'm going to read from his note here because he's from Dorchester, and that's where I'm from. I was a boy from Dorchester, and we don't pronounce our R's. But so bear with me. This is a letter from somebody who was one of these monitors. Like most kids growing up in the 1940s, my family evening entertainment was just an AM radio console. Most nights I enjoyed programs like The Lone Ranger or Jack Armstrong, All-American Boy. For me, World War II was a distant struggle in a world apart, but that changed on my 13th birthday when I received an all-band radio. The reality of the war entered my Dorchester, Mass. Home when I began to pick up German announcers each evening on Berlin radio, reading in clear English the names, messages, and home addresses of American prisoners. It would seem that no American could discover these important messages and just switch off the shortwave without sending a note to some parent that their son was still alive, no longer missing in action. So it seemed natural to me to email out these nightly POW reports to the parents on penny postcards, and I couldn't afford the 3-cent stamps from my paper route to send letters. During the war, I wasn't aware anyone else might be notifying the parents or wives, so my postcards became as important to me as playing soldier or doing my homework. Knowing now that other radio listeners were also sending out notifications, I'm sure no family ever complained about receiving more than one joyous letter. And that's certainly true, and you got quite a few of them. And was this a fellow who you actually had made contact with, Mr. Bardfield?
He absolutely is, and he was amazingly delightful. We spent, I would say, at least 2 years corresponding, and he sent me letters of gratitude that he had received in the 40s. He'd saved them all of these years. He was kind enough to share them with me, sending packages to me. Unfortunately, we lost Morton in 2012. I still keep in touch with his family. And he was delighted to be a part of radio then and carrying on for the rest of his life. So radio was very important to him professionally, personally, as a hobbyist, and obviously in his military career as well. And he was just amazing to talk with. And all of these men and women that I found were very humble about their contribution. When I found them or they found me, because it really did go both ways, they would often say, oh, you're calling me about those letters. You're talking about those letters. They never wanted all of the fanfare that I am trying to gather for them. They really were just happy to do what they could do for the war effort and to be a part of it in the best way they knew how. And I was just trying to elevate that, not only to say thank you from a very personal standpoint of my family thanking him, but I also wanted to then elevate that to hopefully an entire country being able to say thank you to the men and women that were part of this effort.
Now, you know, him, a 13-year-old kid, sacrificing money from, you know, his paper money, you know, that's a big deal, and that's a sacrifice. I would expect nothing less from a stand-up guy from Dorchester either, because that speaks well of where I got my start in life. So, you know, here's, I'm going to read one of these. This is a letter. We couldn't certainly go through them all, but in addition to the content, what also is very striking is this is a generation of people who were well-read. They knew their grammar. They knew how to write, and most of it is pretty legible. You know, beautiful penmanship. And, you know, so it's a great feature in the book where you show the actual photograph of the letter itself, but then supply the text, you know, in case somebody can't make out the way somebody makes an H or an R. But this is one that struck me, and, you know, people would share some of their own war experiences as well. Dear Mrs. Lane, last night on the shortwave from Berlin, this message came for you. Arrived safe as a prisoner of war in Germany. Don't worry, as I am treated well. See Red Cross about package. Letter follows. Love, Robert. My husband is a POW of the Japanese. He was on Bataan, and I would love to have someone send out to me a message from him. I hope you receive your letter soon. And, you know, for anybody familiar with the war, you know, Corregidor, Bataan, you know, sort of typify the darker days in the American campaign in the Pacific. And I certainly hope sometime she got a letter. I hope he came home, but, you know, it must have been very touching, not only for people who were supporting your grandfather and his family, but then would share something like that with you. I mean, that must have been very moving.
It was. And in fact, when I brought those letters home, I was living in D.C. at the time, and I brought them home with me for a few weeks to read them and digest them and try to understand this and get my head around it to know what I should do next. I could only read a few of them every night, because I would get to one like that, and I would begin to cry. And I would cry because I'm thinking about my grandfather being a prisoner of war and his girlfriend being at home, desperate for his return, and his mother. His mother, by the way, who all of her boys were serving in the war, imagining what she was going through. She was a widow at the time. And then you see a woman like this reaching out to another, sharing a moment of joy to know that your son right. is alive, but also imagining the pain that she had,
sure.
desperate to hear something for about her own husband. So it was very emotional for me, and I could only read a few of them every night. So that's why one of the reasons it took weeks for me to get through these, and then I would read them over and over and over, and I know most of them by heart, just because they're not only personal for me in relation to my pappy, but each of these men and women that took their time and spent their money and sat down and typed a right. letter or hand wrote a letter, I really feel connected to them, even if I never found them, just on that platform of gratitude for another human being who reached out to a stranger sure. to share. One man wrote, he said it was in May of 1943, so he wrote, I hope this is a welcome Mother's Day gift to you.
Oh, that's
you know,
very
think
sweet.
About that. It's
that's
Mother's
very sweet.
Day. And he's saying, your son's alive. And I guarantee you that was the greatest Mother's Day that my great-grandmother had ever known, to just know that her son was alive and have hope that he would be
sure.
returned to her.
Now, Margaret Fowler, who wrote the letter, you know, and mentioned her husband on Bataan, you know, maybe listening and recording and sending these letters is a little therapy for her, because at least she feels, you know, she can contribute somehow to the effort. She knows what it's like to be part of that, you know, fraternity of people who have somebody missing. So she knows how much it would mean if you could get a notice that somebody is still with us and serving as a prisoner. And, you know, for her, that's her contribution to the war effort. And maybe she feels, you know, if I do my part, maybe someone, if they hear something about, you know, Mr. Fowler, you know, I'll hear back from them. So, you know, you wonder a little bit about where these people were in their lives and at the time, and how they work this in, you know, to their life. And it really is very, very inspiring. Now, you know, the other interesting thing here as well is a lot of guys and gals who are into radio know, civilian production, commercial production of radio electronics stopped 1942. So pretty much Pearl Harbor comes along, they're still selling radios, and they're all in the showrooms for the next year, because that's December. So the early 42, you could still pick something up new if it was left. But the commercial production stops. You can't buy a radio. It becomes harder to find parts. So all of the people who are doing their shortwave listening, in many cases, are relying on keeping their sets in shape with the help of a local repairman who's very resourceful if they have a problem. And, you know, they're devoting their tube time here to listening and doing these outreaches. You know, it's not as easy as it sounds today, like where you can always walk into a store and get whatever you want. So they're struggling on a lot of different fronts, ration cards, war production schedules at work if you're a war worker, plus the fact that, you know, electronics are hard to fix and hard to come by yet they're still taking the time to reach out, which is just spectacular. Now, I'd like to just put things on pause here for a little bit and remind everybody this is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM. I almost gave out the wrong call letters. I'm so excited here. And we're here with Lisa Sparr, who's written a phenomenal book about shortwave listeners and their contributions to the families of prisoners of war during World War II by letting them know that they were still alive and serving as a prisoner of war. The next fellow I wanted to talk a little bit about is Flavius, and because we can talk a little bit about your meeting with him, and you tracked him down, and he had alerted your family to your pappy's survival, but also he segues very nicely into talking a little bit about this whole phenomenon, because it's really not just individuals. There were some organized groups who were doing this listening as well. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your hunt for Flavius.
I certainly will. Flavius, you know, when I began this search, I wanted to send thank you letters to every single person that I could even possibly find. And I knew that if someone had the last name of Jones, I might not be able to find them if they sent a letter from Chicago. The sheer number of Jones in Chicago would be overwhelming to me. But there were names that were very obscure, such as Jankowskis. And I saw Jankowskis from the Philadelphia area, and I said, well, that's a very unique name. And his first name was Flavius. And I said, well, I should be able to find this gentleman.
Pretty unique.
So exactly, right? So I sent a letter to every Jankowskis I could find via a Google search, and I was lucky enough to get a response back from a Michael Jankowskis. He called me. I was on a business trip. I stepped out of the meeting to take the call, and he said, Lisa, I received your letter. It was very touching. I have a World War II story of my own. I'm very touched by that generation. I do not know Flavius, and believe it or not, we're not even related. But he said, because we do share a last name, I've heard of him. I know he's alive. I know he exists. And I would very much like to help you find him. And I said, well, sir, I'd be so appreciative for any help you can give me. A week later, Michael called me back. He said, I have his name. He said, I have his address and his phone number. And I said, I'll take both. And I don't know how he tracked him down. Within minutes, I was on the phone with Flavius. And he, again, gave me the very typical response I was used to receiving at that time. I sound like a telemarketer when I'm calling someone and I'm trying to get this in quickly. Hi, my name's Lisa Sparr.
Right, before somebody hangs up. I don't want any vinyl siding tonight. That's right.
Exactly. No windows, thank you. And I said, I'm just trying to say thank you for a letter I believe you sent to my family in World War II. And there's a pause. And I said, you sent my family a letter telling us that my grandfather was alive, and you heard this over shortwave radio. And he would stop, and he said, you're talking about those letters. And I said, yes, sir, I am. And we had this wonderful conversation, and he wasn't too far away from me, just a few hours' drive. And I said, I would very much like to meet you if you're open to that. And he was, and I went. I met him and his beautiful companion, Friedel. And I hung out at their home, and I'll never forget. Keep in mind, I still know very little about shortwave radio, even going through this. I don't claim to be an expert whatsoever. But he sat there talking to me, having a very full of life conversation, all the while with his right hand, he's doing Morse code on his equipment. And I was so enamored with that, just his skills and abilities and his wonderful personality. And he's quite a beautiful man. He's probably 6'4". He's very large. And he just told me I did it because I could do it, and I knew how to do it, and I believe these messages were important to people. And when I left there, I'll never forget this, he asked me if I wanted the Howard 430 that he still had, that he heard my pappy's name on. And I was so in awe that I was going to receive this most amazing gift. The first greatest gift he ever gave us was the letter in 1943, written as a teenager to our family. And the second greatest gift was this Howard 430 that I take with me whenever I do speaking engagements and whenever I travel around the country. I take that radio so people can see it. And even when I'm at the library talking to people, you know, usually high school groups come and they get extra credit for coming. And I'm showing them this radio and I'm telling them that in the 40s, someone, you know, Flavia sat here, he listened to this, he heard my grandfather's name, he took pen to paper, and he wrote to my great-grandmother. It all started with this radio. Like, it's so beautiful to me, and the fact that he was willing to give it to me. He said, Lisa, I have a really fancy digital set now. I have no need for this.
Sure.
And I was so grateful to receive it. And it's always, whenever I do shows and whenever I do events, people love coming up and talking about that Howard 430.
Now, it's funny because I've seen that you use that when you I've seen a couple of the clips on your website that you did some interviews with some of the television stations, and that's, you know, front and center right there as you do your discussion. And, you know, for people who are in this hobby, you know, not only, I mean, there are people with lots of different perspectives. There are just those who are amazed at the electronic capabilities of some of these things given the time. And that's their fascination, just to make it work again. Then there are those who look at the design, the cabinetry. And there's this whole other, you know, avenue that a lot of people go down to. And it's, who had this radio? What did they listen to? Did they hear Ted Williams hit home runs? Did they hear Franklin Roosevelt address the nation? You know, and bingo, were they actually relaying information that they were picking up on shortwave to help the morale of families who had prisoners of war? And it's just another reason that, you know, people will say, well, why do you want to save something like that? You know, and the preservation of these sets, the older ones especially, are getting harder and harder to find. You hate to see something like that go into a dumpster. When you look at this one, it's, you know, part of your decor and part of your life now. It was a beautiful gift that he gave you. Now, he's an interesting character, too, because we can kind of transition here a little bit. Not only did he reach out and touch your family and give you a beautiful gift, he was also part of an organized movement. And maybe you could talk a little bit about SWAM. There was a group that had been organized so people would listen, and they were given schedules so that certain nights wouldn't be missed. And, you know, they kept in touch with each other, shared listening hints. Flavius talked a little bit about certain types of antennas that might help people. So maybe you can give us a little idea. Not only was it an individual pursuit, people were doing this on their own, then there were organized groups who were reaching out as well, weren't there?
There were absolutely. And the only organized group that I have confirmed is this one that exactly that you're speaking of, run by Mrs. Ruby Yant out of Lima, Ohio. Everyone else, the 300 people that I've documented that were a part of this effort, to my knowledge, were single. They were individuals listening from their homes or their offices. But when Flavius realized I was so interested in this, not only to say thank you to him, but I said, Flavius, I'm so in love with this story, and I believe that we need to tell it to the greatest ability that we have. I said, I'm going to write a book about it. And he said, really? You're going to write a book about it? And I said, any help that you can give me, anything that you might have to contribute, I welcome it. He began sending me box upon box out of his attic, and I was amazed at what he had saved over the years. He sent me letters, postcards, rosters, newsletters from a Mrs. Ruby Yant, and she organized no less than 45 shortwave listeners. She assigned them to each night of the week, and in her letter asking people to join and to say what night of the week they'd be most apt to be listening, she said, if we can assign 10 people each night, then at least we know maybe a few of us can get the name right. Maybe a few of us can get the address right. We know that the interference is often great.
Sure.
And we know there are lots of obstacles, but the more ears we have on this, maybe the better we can get it through. And ultimately, we don't want a family to not receive a message. So the goal is every family, every name we hear, should receive at least one message. And people signed up. They were delighted to be a part of this. She sent newsletters announcing birthdays, talking about ways to decrease interference. When Flavius then joined the Merchant Marines, he would send her letters about his adventures. She would.
I read some of those. Those are great.
They really are great. I mean, she would post everything she could. She would share with them, and I loved her humor. I mean, this woman, I'd never met her, sadly. I've never found her. At one point, I thought I found her son, but my letters went unanswered. But she had great humor. She said in one of her letters, she said, my husband, Don, he keeps asking why I'm not putting a space between my paragraphs. And she said, well, it's very clear. If I put a space between my paragraphs, it would take up more paper, and it wouldn't utilize the space, and I wouldn't be able to say as much. And I loved that, that she was, I imagine, just this very hardworking woman, very passionate about this, about getting letters to families like mine. And I published her rosters in the book. The names are yep. there. The addresses are there. Yep. And I have to tell you, that is one of the greatest resources I've had in my push for getting these folks congressionally recognized. The only way I'm able to do that is through the letters I received, through the letters that other POWs received, and through the amazing documentation of this woman. She kept impeccable records. And I'm just, my greatest sorrow is that I wasn't able to meet her, because what an amazing contribution. In one of them, she talks about all of the German stations. She lists them, what time that they'll feature the POWs. It was just incredible, as you saw.
A treasure trove.
Her contribution was so amazing. She kept these folks on a schedule. She kept the morale up of them. If someone wasn't feeling well, she would say, please send your well wishes to so-and-so. She would also talk about the propaganda and talk about the things to avoid and talk about if they had someone that might be sending the wrong messages to the wrong people. She had no qualms about calling that out in her information. She was a very bold woman. I think a very courageous woman to be doing this, and obviously a woman loved by many, many that she's never met, all through the love of radio.
And, you know, that's the other thing here is, you know, many of these people would never meet personally, and the bond that they felt just from receiving one of those letters. And, you know, Mrs. Yant, I would not want to have missed my night, you know, because I'd be in for
That's
it
right.
if she found out. Because you really get a sense for just, you know, how completely organized. You know, you've got the chart of all the people who were listening and what some of their assignments were. And the newsletters are great. And a lot of them, I found some parallels to the newsletters. It almost sounds like the New England Antique Radio Club newsletter that I get once a quarter. But, you know, she would talk about different people who came on board, who were going to join them. And Mr. So-and-so has a 9-tube Philco and a 9-tube Silvertone, and we're glad to have him. And, you know, you're right. She built the morale of the group, and there's a real sense of cohesion and a sense of mission. That I think she helped give these people. Not that they probably needed much, but she did give them a lot of encouragement. You know, one thing I wanted to mention here, there was a fellow, and I don't think he was associated with SWAM, but his name is Earl Fitzgerald, and he was a listener up in the Northwest. And apparently he was fairly successful and had done a book, I believe, at one point, that you had Voices in the Night, or an article.
Voices in the Night.
Yeah.
That's right.
And this fellow, you know, had a certain degree of success, and so much so that a lot of his contemporaries, you know, they thought he was limited by his equipment, so they pitched in with $225. He transitioned to a 15-tube, 6-band set. And, you know, just to give people an idea, I mean, if you put that into the you know, put that into the inflation calculator, that's about a $3,000 radio that those people pitched in for. And who even knows where they got it during world time? You know, they might have had to buy it from somebody or find something that was stuck away and wasn't available for sale originally. But, you know, the stories just, you know, in their own unique ways keep, you know, impressing you with the you know, the wisdom of some of these people, their organizational skills, their sense of mission, their feeling for part of the war effort, and, you know, most of all, for looking to extend a hand of comfort via a letter and all tied into something that they had heard on the radio. Now, you know, time always marches on here briskly, and we're running short here. Now, tell us a little bit about your effort to get these hero listeners recognized by the government. And I would want to mention to people, if you go to the Tube Talk show website, which is tubetalkclassicradio.org, we have a link up to Lisa's site. And you can go check her site out and find out a little bit more about the book and some of their efforts. But tell us about your effort to get these folks recognized by the government, because I think that's really something that they deserve.
I agree with you. Thank you for saying that. When I was studying this and understanding this effort, like you just mentioned, Mr. Fitzgerald, he sent more than 4,500 letters to POW families like mine. Mr. Lowe out of New York.
Sanford
Lowe, 10,379, I believe, letters to POW families like mine. Mrs. McKee, thousands of letters sent to families like mine. And I sat down and I thought about the magnitude of that, and I said, not only do I believe this with all my being, that even if you only sent one letter, I believe you should be recognized. But when you think about the magnitude of their giving and their contribution to us as a country and to the service members' family, to the veterans' family, this is such an amazing contribution. A, I was shocked that there wasn't already a book written about this. And B, I said, wait a minute, there's got to be something even more we can do. We wrote a book, we wrote a second edition, we did an audio book. I speak as much as I can, but I'd like to see this taken to the next level. So what's the next level? Well, I believe that congressionally recognizing these men and women is the right thing to do. Their contribution to our servicemen and women, their contribution to their families is simply significant. So I've reached out to a number of both my legislators on a local level and a national level. And unfortunately, I have not had very much success yet, but I remain optimistic. There was a man in Delaware that also reached out at the time to Senators Biden and Ross, and they reached out to the VFW and they said, how many people are we talking about? And the VFW couldn't answer that question. They couldn't say how many shortwave listeners were involved in this effort, and so it never went anywhere.
Right.
And I'm saying that's no reason for it not to go anywhere, just because we don't know if it's 10 or 10,000 or 100,000. So I've compiled a list of 300 men and women that I have addresses for that I know were part of the effort. I will tell you that most of them are probably deceased, but I don't think that that negates us going after congressional recognition for them. I think it's all the more reason we should. And so I've published that list in the book, and I've said anyone that can help me, that can reach their legislator, please do. I'll give you all the documentation you need. I'll give you access to all of my research materials. But the right thing to do is to have Congress acknowledge the contribution of our so-called ordinary men and women who did quite extraordinary things.
Yes, they certainly did.
And so that's my push now, along with, obviously, I'd like to see a documentary. And, in fact, my book just landed in the hands of Ken Burns about a week ago.
Wow.
And so I'm optimistic that he'll read it, that he'll love it. And even if it's not he who wants to pursue it, perhaps he'll hand it off to someone else.
Sure.
But I would just like to see this elevated to the greatest levels possible.
I agree.
We can learn about this amazing generation, another facet of them, which proves that they are the greatest generation, and that we also can understand the role of radio. I think we have a lot of people today who don't understand how powerful that radio was back then and certainly even can be now. And I think this is a great opportunity to do that. So I may also engage ARRL and see if I can, they sell the book for me, and I attend a lot of their national events, but I may also see if they might be able to support us in trying to get congressional recognition.
Well, I tell you what, and you know, we'll talk about this more off air at a later date, but you know, you have AARL, but you know, there's also amateur antique radio club collectors, many of whom have a lot of interesting contacts, not only in the broadcast world, but in the political world. And if there's anything in any way we can do to facilitate this for you, we'd be more than happy to do it. And especially, you know, if they ever did make a documentary and they need to have, you know, visuals of older guys hunched over shortwave radios, I know thousands would be happy to help you out on that count. So, Lisa Sparr, World War II radio heroes, letters of compassion, thank you so much for being on. Now, I don't usually do this. We usually just kind of end the call here, but we'll see if we can pull this off tonight. I'm going to invite you to stay on the line, because one of the other great things about a topic like this is I get to play a lot of super deluxe wartime music. This is one of my favorites. Glenn Miller in the orchestra, Tex Beneke, Marion Hutton in the Modernaires, When Johnny Comes Marching Home. So why don't you stay on the phone there and listen in for a little bit, and we'll certainly be in touch. I'd encourage everybody, go to the Tube Talk website and check out this whole project, because it's not just a book, it's an undertaking, and it's a great insight into the world of radio and World War II. Lisa, thanks again for being on. You stay on the line there, okay?
I will. Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
Thanks, Tube Talk.
You're welcome.
Oh!
Chevy's marching home again. Hooray, hooray. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hooray, hooray.
All the men will cheer and the boys will shout. The gals dress up and they'll all turn out.
And we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home.
Get ready for the Jubilee.
Hooray, hooray.
He'll get three cheers from you and me.
Hooray, hooray.
Uncle Sam will prove he's still a champ. He'll close up shop and break up camp.
And we'll all feel gay when Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching home. When Johnny comes marching
If you're a regular listener to the show, you know we just love Tex Beneke and Glenn Miller, Marion Hutton, the Modernaires, and thank you so much, Lisa Spahr, author of World War II Radio Heroes, Letters of Compassion. It's a great book. Check out the website. Pick up the book. Lisa has done an awful lot of research and touched back to a lot of people who touched her family so very well, and really highlights a great civic service that the radio community help provide during World War II as well. So we're thrilled to have her on, and maybe she can come back. We always like to have a good guest on again. Gang, it's about that time for Tube Talk to head on down the road here. So tubetalk1@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with the show. tubetalkclassicradioshow.org, and there is a link there to Lisa Spahr's website with some more information on her book and on her movement. You know, we'll go so far as to call it that because I think it really deserves some recognition. Thanks for listening. Tell all your friends in the hobby. We'll be back next week on WRCA 1330 AM.